he's right. I do have a stick. But my wife says I'm not allowed to speak softly or people can't hear me in the back.
Well, brethren, do you know what today is?
Saturday? Oh, yes. Day before Mother's Day. Very good. Have you thought about that?
I did.
Yesterday. Had that panicky feeling. Any other ideas? What today might be?
Seventh day.
Okay.
Seventh day
Sabbath.
Oh, okay. Father's Day.
Sorry. I have it together, really. Today is the 21st day within the countdown to Pentecost. That first Sabbath, the holy day, as it fell of the days of unleavened bread. From that day afterwards, we are to count 50. So why? Why are we counting 50? What's the purpose of that? What's the point of it? And frankly, truly, I mean, I think throughout my life, I grew up in the church. That was the way I marked the time. You know, it was like not only doing that, but I had a calendar that came from the church that gave me the date. I'm like, oh, okay, that's 50 days after that Sabbath that falls within the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But I want us to take a look at it and see why God tells us that we should be doing this. Let's turn to Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23 and verse 15. Of course, Leviticus 23 is where God lays out the holy days and what's to happen. Leviticus 23 and verse 15. And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. Count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Then you shall bring an offering of new grain, or a new grain offering to the Lord. You shall bring from your dwellings 2 wave loaves of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be of fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits to the Lord. So brethren, Pentecost is the feast of first fruits. And God tells us that we are to count 50 days. We're told that this is the, or in some translations it's the feast of counting, the feast of weeks. So why are we told to do this? Is it simply so that we know what day to show up because it's not the seventh day Sabbath? Again, I mentioned the credit card, or the, not credit cards, but the cards we get from the church that have all the dates. And frankly, you know, I keep track of everything on my phone. I have the calendar there, right? Well, I believe it's more than that. And I think that as we go through this sermon message, we're going to see. See, so often when God gives these directions to the children of Israel, he's also speaking to the priesthood. And on this day you shall do this, and this is the time for the sacrifices and for the offerings. But here, he very specifically says in verse 15, he's speaking to all the children of Israel, all of them. And you shall count for yourselves. You shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath. This is important. But honestly, I never thought about it. Never really. It's like, well, 50 days after, that's when we gather. Brethren, how do we mark these days? Why is this important? That you and I should count for ourselves 50 days. This is a specific direction for you and I individually. So how are we marking them? I believe that we are not just supposed to be counting these days, but we are to be making them count. There is a specific purpose and a reason for this. So often I think we look at the time before the Passover when we are to examine ourselves so that we may be prepared for the Passover, that we may be ready to take it. However, after the Passover, we're kind of like, whew, done. Oh, wow, got through it. Got my feet washed, had the bread and the wine. I'm good, right? Except just a little over 50 days from the Passover, we are to be marking this time. That word to count for yourselves in Hebrew is safar. Safar. It doesn't mean just counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know. We're working on that with Isaac right now. He's kindergarten. And, you know, we're working on math and numbers and getting him through all of those. And counting, that is a part of it, but that is the most basic understanding. And that's really not what this word means. This is a primitive, the primitive root word properly means to score with a mark as a tally or record. And this means to inscribe, meaning to cut deeply. This counting is not just counting. This should cut deeply. And to enumerate, intensively to recount. It goes on that we celebrate this, that we commune, we declare. I love this. It also uses this. It gives a description of a penknife to scribe. You know, so often when we think of the scribes, you know, the Pharisees, Sadducees, the scribes, scribing actually means to leave an impression, to cut. That's what we're supposed to be doing after the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. To be marking these days. I have a prop. Who can tell me what that is? One? Okay. How about that? Oh, there we go. Kids are smart. Okay. But what are these?
Parallel lines.
Okay. Symbols. Hash marks. There we go. Numerals. Okay. Oh, who said that? Tally. Tally marks. This is the way that I was taught how to count. When I was just getting started, how many of you learned how to count this way? Yeah. It's kind of an old school style. But we see 1, 2, 3, 4. And then we, with another tally mark across connecting them, we now have 5. And if we were to go down and do this again, you didn't have to count each tally mark. You just knew this is 5 and that's 5, making 10. Now, I believe most of us are familiar with these. Even if it wasn't the way that you were taught how to count in school, you've probably seen movies where there's somebody like in a prison, and they're marking the days. They're counting them down. They've got a rock or something, and they're scribing it in the wall. I've actually done some tours of prisons, like back in New England, that were hundreds of years old, and pretty dark and dreary and wet, and just a horrible, you can't imagine being in there. And you could see all along these stone walls where men had marked the time. They had cut it into the rock. And it wasn't just, again, counting. There was an impression that was not only made into the stone itself, but into that individual. And I could only imagine what was going through their heart and mind in that dark, dreary place. Now, sometimes you may have seen these in movies. You know, like I think of Castaway, I think, where, you know, they're stranded on an island and they're marking the days that they've been there. Or else we lose count. It just becomes a blur. How long have I been here? You know, or what is my expectation? How long must I wait? What needs to be done in this time that we have? These are tally marks. Again, this is a word which is still used, I believe, in economics. You keep a running tally. You know, this is something that even if we have bills, we have expenses, things that we're doing, you have a tally. You know, these are terms that are ancient, that are still used today as we keep track of things, as we have to reckon our bill at the end. So this is a keeping time. This is a keeping a score, a track, how we measure things. That is also the oldest known form of counting. The oldest known form of counting to mankind. Who knows what this is? It's a stick. Yes, a stick. Pretty simple. They've been around literally forever, since God created the world and the Garden of Eden. We've had trees, and these are the things that grow. They're all over the place. Every fall and spring, you're probably picking them up in your yard, kind of a nuisance. And yet, this is also a form of correction, of measurement, but also keeping score, keeping count. Throughout history, and again, there are examples found all the way back long before the Egyptian Empire that have been found. There are sticks that have had markings cut into them. In the Middle Ages, they properly named them a tally stick. But again, from whether it's the Middle Ages going back to really the dawn of civilization, people would keep track with sticks. And it was a legal and binding document, which could be carried, which could be exchanged. It was how in the Middle Ages they actually paid their taxes, was a stick, and you would cut into it. You would keep markings. Now, what they believe the earliest use of the tally stick was, say, like if a man was going to buy a flock of sheep. The man who was selling and the man who were buying, they would have the sheep move past them. And they would have two counters, one representing the seller and one representing the buyer. And they're going to pay so many pieces of silver or gold for each sheep. And so they would count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they would mark in the stick how many there were. And at the end, they would compare. How many did you count? Well, how many did I count? Okay. And they would have this agreed upon amount. And they would exchange the gold, And they would mark it with their own mark, their own impression, their own specific cut, or if they could write their name, and they would exchange it. And you walked around, and this was your receipt with marks cut into it, cut deeply. In the Middle Ages, it may have been happening before then, but it was recognized as, again, an official form of barter, payment. You could take it to the bank and exchange it for gold. But most often you paid your taxes. And what you would do is cut a section out of the wood. And the width of your hand, about four fingers here, you would cut very deeply on one end, and then you would take your knife and you would cut that amount out, and it would break off. And that was 1,000 pounds. This length right here. Now, you may have a couple lengths like that. Okay, that's 2,000 pounds. Now, the length of your finger was 100 pounds. And then you'd mark that out. And anyone who saw that, they were like, oh, 2,100 pounds. And if you were paying your taxes to the king, you would go to him and you would have your gold and you would take a tally stick. And the exchequer would say, okay, you owe this amount of money and you've paid. And they would mark out the stick. And then they would take a knife and they would cut into the stick and actually split it lengthwise along where those marks were. And the exchequer would write your name and that this was your payment of taxes. And he would give you half of the stick, and then they would keep half of the stick for their records. They actually, early 1800s, they burnt down the palace at Westminster because they had so many thousands upon thousands of sticks that they'd been keeping for year upon year, that they were like, okay, we're not going to use this system anymore. Most people can write. They ordered servants to start throwing them into the fire. And the fire burned so hot, it got out of control and burnt down the entire complex, where now we have like the House of Commons and Big Ben and all that sense. Yeah, they leveled it because of tally sticks. But this is what you kept. This was how you were to mark the days. How you were to remember them. And it was to cut deeply. It had a meaning to it. It wasn't just counting. There was a purpose to it. Now, one of the things also that, I'll get into that later. So God, brethren, is telling us that we are to mark the days. We are to count them. And again, that is to cut deeply. What is it we're supposed to really be measuring? From the time, as we look at it as the New Covenant Church, from the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the time of being brought out of bondage, having our sins covered by the blood of Jesus Christ, until the Feast of the First Fruits. Again, this isn't just about counting. We're to make these days count. If you're looking for a title, that's it. Counting the days, making them count. Counting the days, making them count. I want to turn to the book of Job. This is the oldest book in the Bible. It is not the book that was written first. That was, of course, was Genesis, with the timing and everything. But this story of Job was recorded first. Job 14. This is something which Job would have understood. Job, of course, suffered more than any human being had at that point, up until, as far as we know, Christ. And God allowed this to happen to him. He was the most righteous man on earth. Yet he was going to suffer, and God was going to make it for his good for an appointed time. Remember, Lucifer wanted him, Satan. And he's like, ah, you just take away all these things. Just give it time. Just mark the days, and he will curse you. This is what Job went through. We know what Job suffered. Job 14 and verse 13. Job's crying out to God. He says, oh, that you would hide me in the grave, that you would conceal me until your wrath is past. Now, of course, this isn't just, it's better for me to die and to have these trials finally stop. Job understands that there is a day of wrath that will come upon the whole world. And then there will be a resurrection. And he says that you would appoint me a set time, a specific time, a date, and remember me. He says, if a man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my hard service. Again, he's marking days here. I will wait till my change comes. He understands the resurrection. He understands being a first fruit. You shall call and I will answer you. You shall desire the work of your hands. Verse 16, for now you number my steps, but do not watch over my sin. My transgression is sealed up in a bag and you cover my iniquity. He's saying that God is numbering his every thought and action. Everything he does, all the good, all the progress, everything he makes, he's notching it. You know, you think about some of the old things. I grew up reading Louis L'Amour's, westerns. You know what gunfighters used to do when they killed somebody? They put a notch in the handle of their gun. We still do that today. The pilots, Air Force. Remember World War II? The fighter pilot, the jet, their plane, would have emblems for how many of the enemy he'd shot down. These are numbering also their accomplishments. This is numbering what they did during their service. This is what God is doing with us as well. He is numbering our days, numbering our service, numbering our overcomings, our accomplishments. But then he says, he's also covering our iniquities. He's not counting those against us. But we have to have a record. I believe that in many ways, and this is one of my training pastors, and I talked about this, that God was telling Job, I want you to number your days. I want you to keep track of what it is that you are doing. Because someday there's going to be a reckoning. Someday you're going to take your tally stick, the split tally, because God's been keeping track. Have we? Again, historically, what they would do is, as you had a split tally, if anybody ever called it into question, what you had done or what you had not done, what you had paid or not paid, what you had given, they would put the two sticks together and compare them. They matched up. You both signed both copies. That's why nowadays we sign contracts in duplicate and triplicate. They have to match. They have to be the same. If somebody else has cut out more, it'll show up. This is what is expected of us, how we are also to be counting the days, to take stock in what we're doing. You know, so often, you know, when I was a little boy, I'd say my prayers at night, and because that's what good little boys and girls do, you know, that's what our parents teach us to do. But how many of us at the end of the day get on our knees and take stock of what we've done? Or maybe what we haven't done? How did my day go today? How do I compare that to what I wanted to do today? Or what I did yesterday or the week before? We are to be keeping track of this, to evaluate. Christ gave us the ultimate sacrifice, and we are covered by Him. But we've also got a short period of time to live up to it, to match, to grow. Are we taking stock of these days? Are we marking them? Are we growing as the first fruits? Again, we have an expectation. Now, this leads me to the second aspect of the stick. Sticks are also used to measure, not just marking money or accounts, but they were used to measure lengths, distances. It was always a designated length that was recognized. Now, in Egypt, again, the children of Israel would have been very familiar with this. Each measuring rod, as they called it, was exactly 1 cubit. And this was the stick that the overlords would walk around and measure by. So everything that the children of Israel did in whatever building and construction that they were given, or even if it was the making of bricks, it had to meet the measure of the rod, of the stick. They would lay it down, and if it didn't conform, whether it was lengthwise, height, depth, then it didn't pass. It had to measure up. Or it was cast away, or it was like, well, you've still got more work to do. Now, there's another way that these were used, and it was to determine how far someone must go. How many of you have ever heard of measuring distance by rods? Yeah, how many rods you have to go? People who do hiking and orienteering and stuff like that. This is a term which they're familiar with. In modern day terms, it's much bigger than it was originally. Again, we don't know exactly what that was going back again to like the times of Egypt. But in Rome, the length of a rod was essentially the length of your spear. So anywhere between 6 feet and possibly 10 feet. Pikes, certain spears had different lengths. But that was the length that they could drop it down. Bang. And how many rods was it to their next destination? This is something that even, again, has been changed a little bit and used. People who are, I forget the term, they're measuring off property lines and things. Surveyors, yeah. They will use rods, staffs, and poles, but they'll also use chains so that it's, even if the ground is broken and uneven, they'll drop it down and they'll mark it. Some of you are familiar with football. Yeah, American football. This is kind of where they get, you know, where they measure out if you've made another first down. They'll bring out the pole and the chain. And they're like, oh, sorry, 4th and 9. You know, oh no, look, you actually did. You crossed the line, and now, you know, we'll continue playing. They measure it. Now, my mom also had a measuring. Some of you will remember this. Spare the rod, spoil the child. I got the rod when I did not measure up to mom's expectations. Mom had a certain level of behavior that she expected out of her son. And if I didn't measure up, but it was a correction. All these words are tied in. It is how we measure, how we are told by God to measure ourselves, lest we be measured. Christ said this, Matthew 7 and verse 1, "Judge not that you be not judged." Again, it's said Matthew 7 verse 1. In verse 2, "For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure that you use, it will be measured back to you." This is one of those lessons when we understand the actual implication, what the children of Israel would have known and understood, especially during Christ's time. You know, so often those who were in authority, again, think of the pharaohs, they would have a staff or a rod and a hook. This is the measure, but it's also used if you don't measure up. Now, within the Church of God or any human nature, we tend to look at people and judge them. And we're like, and sometimes verbally, we're like, whack, 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 whack. Now imagine, here's God saying, "Oh, okay, that's how you want to measure. You're going to put your standard on all these other people because you think you're so good." You're like, okay, you can do that. But now I'm going to take that rod and I'm going to measure you with it. That's kind of scary, isn't it? That expectation that we have for everyone else, God our Father, who is not blind, who sees everything, is going to measure us with it. Now again, it doesn't have to be used like clubbing someone if we're measuring ourselves. If we're looking at the time that we have, that we're told to measure ourselves, that we are told to cut deeply, to look at, to mark. Because again, the feast of the first fruits, the harvest of the first fruits is a short period. And we've been given this gift. We've been given the blood of Christ and His body. We've been washed clean. Now how do I measure up to truly the first of the first fruits? Am I actively working on it? At the end of the day, do I look at what I've done and lay down the stick beside it and see where I've fallen short? Or am I just counting? Oh, that'll be Sunday. What day? What day is this? It's so much more than just counting, brethren. Again, the First Covenant Church is given God's Holy Spirit, which makes you His temple. His temple, the stones which are being built, that's you and I. That's us. And there is a standard, there is a measurement. The chief cornerstone is the one which all the other stones have to match up to, are compared to. Now, years ago, there was a movie that came out that I don't know that I can recommend it, but it was called A Knight's Tale. It was a movie about knights and jousting and the tournaments and this young man who wanted to change his stars, change his future, because he was poor. And you could only compete if you were a knight. You had to have this bestowed upon you by the king. So they fake it, you know, he's a squire, his knight dies, And they're like, well, I'll just put his armor on. Nobody has to see it's me. And I'll compete. And I'll rise up. I can meet this. So there's the protagonist, this young man, and then there's the antagonist, the bad guy. And one of the lines that he says through this movie is, you have been weighed, you have been measured, and you have been found wanting. He's saying, you don't measure up. You don't measure up to the standard. This is the standard. These are the rules that are inherent in it. And you've been found lacking. Brethren, how do we measure up as first fruits? You know, again, I always, throughout my life, I've always focused on the Passover. You know, okay, all right, I got to look at myself and evaluate. And then we have the Passover, the not too much observed, which is a celebration. It's wonderful, and we love it. And then there's coming out of Egypt. But then what are we supposed to do after that? Are we just counting down the time until there's another holy day and we all get together and we bring our offerings and tithes? Or is it so much more? An intensive counting of marking the days, of measuring ourselves. My in-laws, Joy's parents, came to our home last evening. They'd been planning on trying to get up earlier and be here with us. They live in Texas. But when we told our children that Papa and Mama are coming, you know, they're all excited. But Isaac starts counting down the days. He counts down those days, and he asks every day, how many more days? How many more days till Papa's here? And he can't wait. And he'll mark them, you know, in his five-year-old way. And then when he knows that it's getting really close, you'll see them looking out the window. And he can't tell time, but he's counting the minutes and the hours. There's a hope and an expectation that is a joy. You know, there's the other side, which is, oh no, I've got to count down the time of, you know, I think of, I'm not a big hockey guy, but they have what's called a penalty box. It's basically a big 6'4", 250-pound man who's a thug being put in timeout. And he has to sit in a little penalty box because he was naughty. And they start a clock. And it's funny because you can see him looking at the clock. He's like, oh, let me back out there. Ah. But no, you got to stay. Mark, you need to learn a lesson. You sit in here, and now everybody has to play without you. There's also the expectation of, you know, I've only got so much time to get this done. I've only got so much time to finish. I usually go through this when my wife goes to visit family without me. And I'm not paying any attention to the time. I'm kind of missing her and the kids. But then the time grows short. And suddenly I realize I've got a lot of cleaning to do. And I only have so much time to get it done. And so while Isaac is looking out the window expectantly for, you know, Papa and Mama, I'm rushing around going like, oh no, I should have done this a long time ago. Ah, you know, I've only got so many time, you know. Either way, it's with the expectation that we need to be doing something, that we need to be preparing, that we need to be getting ourselves ready. This is what we're supposed to be marking, brethren, as we cut deeply, as we remember, as we use it to measure ourselves. This is the example I've just been given of the first fruits. How do I measure up? Am I actively looking at myself? Am I comparing myself and seeking to change who I am? To become less like Dave and more like Christ? This is an active counting. It is supposed to cut deep. We need this. And it is a blessing for us. Brethren, I want to look back at Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23, and we'll look at verse 18. Again, this is the Feast of Pentecost, the first fruits. Leviticus 23 and verse 18. And you shall offer with the bread 7 lambs of the first year, without blemish, 1 young bull and 2 rams. Do you know how they know that they were without blemish? Because they were examined thoroughly. They were brought to the priest, and before they could be included, you know, someone else selected them, but the priest went over them with a fine-tooth comb to see if they measured up to be worthy of the sacrifice. Again, this is the time that we are given. And they shall be as a burnt offering to the Lord, with their grain offering and their drink offerings, an offering made by fire for a sweet-smelling aroma. This is what we're offering to God. And it's supposed to be pleasant. You know, at the end of a day and you're hungry and you're thinking about dinner, and maybe you go home and your neighbor's grilling steaks, and you get out of your car and that aroma, and you're like, Oh, that is wonderful. That is really good. The other day I met someone for lunch, and we went to Five Guys Burgers. I've only been there like twice in my life. My kids have been there more often. I came home, and Gracie came out to meet me. She's like, Daddy, you're home. And she gave me a hug, and she leaned into my chest, and she went, you smell like Five Guys. This is what God's looking forward to with these first fruits that have been made ready. You know, He's longing for us. There's that expectation that this is going to be so good. We have to be working on this so that we are that sweet-smelling aroma. Verse 19, that you shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goats as a sin offering, and 2 male lambs of the first year as a sacrifice of a peace offering. Again, covering our sins, and then peace. Brethren, when you know that you've worked hard on something, and it's been tested and measured, and it's measured up, there is such a sense of peace. It's like, I did it. It passed. It was good enough. Verse 20, the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Lord with the 2 lambs. They shall be holy to the Lord for the priest. This is what we've been given. This is what we're hoping for, what we're looking forward to, the expectation that God has for His people. Now, how do we measure up? Let's turn to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 4. First Peter 4, and one of the things that I love about this, brethren, is Peter's writing this in his advanced age. This is many years after he was a disciple following Christ. And Peter, you know, as we read the Gospels and we see how he did, some days he did really well. I mean, talk about zeal for God. You know, he's like, I'll follow you. Jumps out of a boat to be near Christ. You know, is willing to take a sword and fight for him. And then in the next moment, he's running away. And in the days after, he knows that Christ has risen, been resurrected. He goes fishing. But here he is, much later, writing. And he writes this, 1 Peter 4 and verse 1. Therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind. Again, we have the split tally. We see his, and we are supposed to put them together. How do we measure up next to him? For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Again, God may be covering mine, but I haven't ceased making them, making those mistakes. That he no longer should live the rest of his life in the flesh for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. Again, this is what we are supposed to be emulating. For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles. When we walked in lewdness, lusts, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries, in regard to these, they think it strange that we did not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. Again, whatever we've done in the past, we're now making different marks. During this time that we have until the Pentecost, we're truly supposed to be actively cutting deeply and making new marks, not falling back into old habits or letting the days be squandered. We're supposed to be redeeming them. Because he says, they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. There will be a reckoning. All of us are going to have to bring our tally stick and compare it. How will it measure up? Will we have done enough? In verse 6, for this reason the gospel was preached also to those who are dead, that they might be judged according to the men, or to men in the flesh. Again, judged, reckoned, but live according to God in the Spirit. But the end of all things is at hand. Therefore be serious and watchful in your prayers. Am I just praying, thank you for this day, you know, here we go. Or am I measuring? Am I actually looking at the marks? Did I give £1,000 of British sterling today? Did I give sterling of myself? Something that's been good and refined? That's a big mark. It covers a lot of the stick. You know what a penny is? It's just marking the day. It's literally just a small straight cut. Well, I've had days like that. You know, haven't we all? Whew, made it. Tomorrow will be better. Tomorrow I'm going to work harder. Because I think my Heavenly Father is looking down on me saying, well, son, how was your day? Okay. But tomorrow is another day. We marked it. We see. I didn't do what I wanted to do. Or maybe worse yet, I did just the opposite. I don't know how you take a negative tally in a stick. I don't know how that works, but Again, he's willing to cover, so long as we are willing to do. Verse 7, but the end of all things is at hand. Again, this is what we're going to hand to God. Therefore, be serious and watchful in your prayers, and above all things, have fervent love for one another. For love will cover a multitude of sins. You know, sometimes we look at it and we want to measure our great accomplishments. Look what I did for the Lord. But what does he say will count for nothing if we don't have love? Again, how do we measure ourselves? How are we keeping track of these days? How are we counting them and making them count? We don't want to let these days be wasted. Luke 14 and verse 28 tells us this, Christ's own words. For which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? You know, we cover this when we do baptismal counseling, counting the cost. Not only the cost that Christ paid so that we could be given this opportunity to be called in, to be forgiven, to be given his Holy Spirit, to become first fruits. But then, are we willing to count the cost? What are we willing to do? What are we willing to sacrifice? Or will we quit? Because I think that's really, brethren, this parable is not just about the expense of what it's going to take. But what are we willing to do to build his temple? That we're willing to go through what it takes to measure up. Brethren, May 30th is Memorial Day, right? Memorial Day is the day that our nation is supposed to stop and take stock of and remember all of those individuals who served and died so that our nation could exist, so that our nation could thrive. Often people go to cemeteries and clean them up and lay flowers or wreaths upon the tombstones of those who were veterans. I remember there's a saying, and I wish I could remember who said it initially, but it says, some gave all, or all gave some gave all. You know, our nation, everyone has built it, but there are some who gave everything for it. Something that is often done during the Memorial Day is there's an address which is read that was presented by Abraham Lincoln, the Gettysburg Address. And I don't want to read the entirety of it. It's not really a very long address at all. But I want to read this portion to you. I think as we look at the first fruits of the kingdom of God, so many of those who gave their lives so that this physical country, this nation under God could exist, should be an example for us as we are truly going to a nation, a kingdom under God, to be the first fruits. This is what Abraham Lincoln said of these individuals. He said, but in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate. We cannot consecrate. We cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it. Far above our poor power to add or detract, the world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. The full measure of their lives. All the days that they could have lived, they gave. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Imagine if our leaders today spoke of God's kingdom in the same way. Imagine if we looked forward to the feast of the first fruits with that same devotion, with that desire to finish the work which Christ begun in all of us, as an example for all of those who will come. Psalms 90 and verse 12. This is a psalm of Moses. A psalm of Moses as he was leading the children of Israel to that new kingdom. A godly kingdom. A holy kingdom. Psalms 90 and verse 12. He cries out to God, "So teach us to number our days, to make them count, that they cut deeply, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." It's not just letting the days fly by. It's doing something with them, making them count. "Return, O Lord, how long?" With that same hope and expectation that a child has, waiting. "And have compassion on your servants. Oh, satisfy us early with your mercy." You know, we're supposed to pray, "Thy kingdom come, that we may rejoice and be glad all of our days, because we're using them. Make us glad according to the days in which you have afflicted us." Because this affliction changes. This is what refines us, that we grow. Just as Christ was afflicted for our sakes. "The years in which we have seen evil, let your work appear to your servants and your glory to their children. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us and establish the work of our hands." Establish it. Make it strong. Take the efforts that we do and help them to measure up. Not by our glory or our spirit, but by His. That covers our transgressions. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Brethren, we are counting down the days to Pentecost. 50 days. We're at day 21. We need to make these days count. We need to see how we will measure up. We need it to cut deeply so that we may intensively recount the work of our hands and that God will establish them. Brethren, let's look forward to it. Let's hope for it and long for it. And let's make these days count.